information, kind of a point of reference.
Okay.
So it has some real numbers on it. So what we're talking about with the RFP, of course, are budget numbers, but this document actually has real numbers, and I pulled these this morning. So it's as of this morning.
Okay, that's good.
And so I thought maybe it would be helpful to compare Elwia 26, which is us. Elwia 25 is Mantricon, which is Marion, Jefferson, Jackson counties. And Elwia 23 is the one that covers Alani, Centralia, Effingham. Elwia 23 actually has 14 counties, same as us. So just to kind of give you a point of reference, I thought it was kind of nice to see that we're right in line number-wise. And if you look at total allocations, we're significantly less. And those allocations include, that's everything. That's just off the top allocation. So that would also include the board office admin. So, but I thought when we were discussing, maybe we should actually look at some actual costs as well as budgeted ones, kind of see where we really are. Hey, Lori. Hello. Do you need to call roll, or can you? Do you figure Daffy Wall was here?
I got it. Okay. But I can call it if you want to be official.
No, okay. I think we're good.
Okay.
Yeah, please, thank you. I have it just so you know, in the room is Kevin Fetters and Lori Cox and Ginger McBride and Rick Wilson. And then from the providers, we have Lena Hicks, Angie Payton, and Dina Williams.
Count me as both because I'm on the committee.
Yes. I thought Royce was going to be here, and I'm surprised he's not, but and in true fashion, we're five after, so he wouldn't want us to wait on him, so.
Okay.
And I think online we have Dina.
Williams.
Well, Don Williams, yeah. And Dean Rogan. Did I miss anybody on the phone? Okay.
Speak now, forever hold your peace.
That's right. Well.
Okay.
How does the group want to, this is an unofficial official meeting, just some background maybe. When we were doing the RFP, there was some concern about moving forward and some questions that the committee thought needed asked. So we asked the providers to come and give the executive committee a chance to ask the questions. So I guess I will just open it up to whoever wants to start with the questions. Please make sure you talk loud.
Was there any email to you?
Yes. There was some questions emailed, and I forwarded them onto the service providers. I had responses from Ginger and from Chris Houghton. And Chris may be on, jump in on the call at any time. He had something he had to do, take care of this morning.
Do you want to start with the questions that they sent you?
Do you have the questions?
I have them pulled up if you.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got
them. Do you guys want to just start with those since?
I think we have a question first. I think the board approved the RFP, the full board did. So we're 4 months into the program year. We're a little concerned that, you know, after the fact now, why are the questions being asked now instead of when the RFPs came in?
The questions concerned not the RFP, they concerned the, correct me if I'm wrong, Ginger, they concerned the thing that was sent back, the responses to the RFP is what it was. And it was more of a capacity and how we're going to do things in the future and how we're going to make sure that things are done as well as we possibly can. Did I kind of cover the?
Yeah, I think that was really the discussion when we met last. It was just concerns over being sure that we steady things up to move forward in a way that's going to maybe keep us out of trouble.
Well, and I think when you submit your application, when you submit the RFP, that's when we get what both of you say, okay, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, this is the timeline we're going to do it in, and this is how much we're going to spend doing that. And so I don't think these questions came up until we received your actual application to the RFP. The RFP is just the request for proposal.
So I think, yeah, the RFP approval with the full board, I think, was just the release of the RFP. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yeah, it wasn't approving your applications.
Well, and we knew it wasn't the application approval, but that helps a little bit as far as, you know, why 4 months in are we, you know, are we here now instead of earlier?
Right. Did that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of the questions that were sent on the 24th, they were RFP specific, though.
That's why we had the...
But we didn't, and I'm just basing this on conversations we've had.
Right.
We did not feel like those were answered to put us at ease.
Hello.
We had a car race going on for a second.
Sometimes people can sync their phones to that, and they don't know they've done it. And so, like, one day I was in here working, and someone's text messaging came up. And so I could see everything they were texting someone, which was not good. And so I think that's why, is that, would you... All that agree with that those are in fact related directly to the questions that were on the RFP, but we just wanted a little more information on how you all answered them.
So do you want to start with Kevin's? Do you want to start with Chris's questions?
Sure.
That was...
You may want to start with Ginger's questions, because I think they're more capacity related. And maybe Chris, that will give Chris time to jump on. Okay. And maybe... we can then know where he was going and what he was thinking.
Yeah, because when I interpreted Chris's question, this was kind of my take on it, was Chris is asking for the things he asked of us at the board meetings. He wants to see numbers. He is that type of individual from what I limited know of him. As a board member, that's what he would like, is a really good report when we give a service provider report. What is going on in our territory? And I think it is somewhere where, personally, we failed to provide that to the board, because I am kind of that way, too. I would like to see how many people we serve in Pulaski County where I live. How many are we doing here? What is the amount of money that can be spent on this individual? And is my county getting its fair share of the money?
I think that... The concern that I stand in, since I'm so new.
Who's speaking? I need to know.
Rick Wilson.
Rick Wilson.
Introduce yourself so I can.
Okay. Yeah. And that was Dina. Mr. Rogan, that was Dina speaking.
Okay. Hi, Dina. Okay. I'm sorry.
Hello.
And this is Rick Wilson. The way I interpret the concern was, I think the whole board kind of wanted to see what's the bang for the buck that we're getting. Because we didn't have number-specific references to know if the money being spent was accomplishing the goals that were set. That's the way I interpret it.
And possibly, maybe, this is Dina again, maybe we need to go back to how we got on the watch list, because I think a lot of this kind of stems from that. And since that happened in my agency, if that's all right, this is the appropriate time to kind of talk about that. The watch list was caused when we had a large event with staff who did not have training to do a trade event. We all are aware of that. We'll just put it back out on the table again. That is what happened. Had a staff member who'd been with us for over 30 years to retire, and we hired in someone who we thought had the ability to run the program, did not. Pam and I actually sat with some monitors and watch this person actually, say it in the terms I understand, throw a fit and walk out of the room, and I had to address it immediately. and, you know, take care of that. In the process, you know, there was a grievance filed at our office, you know, because that would make sense, you know, for that. So we went through that process. In that time, I learned a lot about what WEOA really is. In my mind of minds, as long as I had ever worked at Shawnee Development, WEOA, or JTBA, or whatever the program was strictly a glorified scholarship program for people to go to school, and most of that was done with our local community college, Shawnee Community College. I mean, that was where all the money went, and that's how it worked. Once we got into it and we really went to eligibility training, Deb and Brian came and did all of this technical assistance with us. We truly, me and the staff, got a really good understanding about what the WEOA program can do. And so it is geared toward individuals getting their training at the community college, but it also is geared toward work experience. And the whole goal is that person gets what they need to go to work, pay taxes, pay back into the system so that the next person in line can go right back through the system. That is the overall goal of how it works. So, you know.
I just want to say this. With all due respect, I think our concern is that people who have been doing this for 20 years just learned that. Mm-hmm. That is our concern.
And especially when we've been saying it.
And I know, and we can target that. I can think of the exact staff person that has gone through that. And for me, that was a surprise also. I mean, there was a true eye-opening in my agency as to, because I was like, you never did that? They never did it. The way the program was operated prior to me being a part of it was that the person who was sitting in the program manager's position approved, did a lot of hand-holding and things. There was a big reveal of how the program was working. It is totally different now. You know, there is steps, there's procedures, there are different people that are looking at things and doing different specific jobs to pull WEOA together. So
good. Well, you know, some of us, especially as partners, this is Ginger, by the way, in our agencies, we, because we're also providers and grant recipients, so we understand the level of accountability related to these grants, and so that's why the events of the past year have kind of had such a difficult thing to kind of come to terms with, because we know the depth of accountability related to not only our programs, but your programs as well. And we know that at a state level, when accountability is that high, there is not room for anyone in an agency to not know. And so it is really important to us that moving forward, we know that all of the staff at an agency that we're providing dollars to, because we're on the board, and so our accountability exists just as deeply. We want to be sure that the dollars are being put in a place that fully understands that commitment and obligation to be good stewards of those dollars.
Because I think this is Dina again. Pam and I crunched, we were in a discussion weeks ago and about our funding levels, and her question was, well, about how much funding do you get in your whole agency? 2 years ago, well, I think it was 2016, I started out 13% of our entire agency budget was from Southern 14. With events, with Mid-5 closing and us getting the additional, we jumped up to 16%. And then with the trade event, we're at 40%. 40% of the money our agency receives. So this is important to me. This is a service that, you know, that I'm going to fight for. I don't know how else to put it, you know.
This is Lori. I do just want to say that, you know, one of the things you had said was that, you know, you were there to service and to service Shawnee Community College, and now that you have our counties as well, I just want to make sure that, you know, whatever we need to do as far as Southeastern goes, that those people from Pope and Hardin in those southern counties in our district that you serve are also getting that same,
yes,
you know, that same service.
They are, yes.
Okay.
And I know this goes.
It's like Grand Central Station on that little phone.
How it is on the phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I don't know which way I'm going. I wrote all kinds of notes. It's okay, just keep going. Sorry, Lena.
No, you're fine.
I guess we're going me and then you.
Lena, do you happen to know how much of your budget is we owe?
I cannot tell you. And honestly, so that everybody here knows, and this is Lena, by the way. Sandy's mom passed away yesterday, so she had planned on being here. You know, we have a lot of information and can provide more if there's something that we don't have today. So if you want that, we can get it. I can tell you it's probably nothing as close to what Dina has with her agency, having, you know, numerous state and federal programs. But, you know, just like Dina stated, we serve people. And that, as a community action agency, that's what we do. You know, we're going to fight for the funding, whether it's 1% or 90%. You know, and we have a lot of strategies now. We've had some staff changes. Sandy's going to retire in about another year. So Angie's been training, is it 2 years now?
A year and a half.
And, you know, we've picked up Bruce Baldwin, who is wonderful.
Fabulous.
Yes. And, you know, other career planners as well. But, you know, we have some fresh ideas and some changes. We did learn that we could do over income, the 49% over income. So my question was, why were we not doing that in the past? And I understand it's probably a little bit more difficult. Just having monitoring last week, they tear apart the applications, look at everything. But, you know, we have monitors in all the time. You know, we do follow GATA. We know what we're supposed to do. We can put forth strategies on how we look to improve participation. You know, we can't tell you, yeah, we can do that 100% because there are only so many people that we can serve. At this point, I guess, you know, what are the questions?
Your targeted percentage of people served, this is Rick, is it meeting the goals that were set in the amount of money that you're getting per person?
You have that information.
We are meeting the goals, except for dislocated workers. We're struggling in that area. And I think that's probably across the board. You know, you have to have specific criteria to meet the dislocated worker funding, and, you know, the people are just not there right now, so.
Well, and if I could interject really quick, if you'll see that you got a WIOA plan versus summary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This actually is, like I said, I ran this morning, so this is, so if you'll see in adults, for example, if you look at quarter one, that's really the only quarter we've really kind of done so far, but our plan was to serve 62. We actually served 118. So we really are serving more than we had said we would. So just to give you some, I thought just to give you a frame of reference when we're talking actual numbers versus budget numbers.
And we have the flexibility to move dislocated worker to adult.
Yes, and we did move some dislocated worker funds to adult when we did the initial application of the PY19 money. Obviously, these figures that you're looking at was spending PY18 money.
I can say, this is Lena again. One strategy that we had, within a few hours of hearing the Wildcat mine closing, I had posted on our Waddy Facebook page, and we had people calling the office within 38 minutes. Angie and I had talked that same day. I said, I want boots on the ground. I want people out at the mine with information, not only on WIOA, but other services we provide. So the event that you planned is wonderful. We'd already planned on sending people out, so we'll send Bruce, and is Christy going to go as well? So our county manager for Saline County will be in attendance. So, you know, we plan on taking information to people because we realize now they're not all going to come to us. We're going to have to develop new strategies and ways to pull people in.
Yeah, I think that is a concern as another provider of services in the area. We do know that students struggle to reach your offices. That is true, and I know that there are some county extension offices, but I know historically it was always that you come to us rather than we come to you approach. And I know we have to look at our provision differently. We have to go out and find them, and to be honest, your partners need for you to do that as well. It's the only way I think we're gonna effectively serve the population. So I know we would all really like to see that ability happen. I know there have been some discussions. I know I remember seeing a draft of maybe an online application, or, and I don't know if that's cool or if that works, but some just ideas for changes.
That would be phenomenal.
Students.
It's on the Southern 14 website.
Okay, good.
It was developed and it was placed on there and it is available.
Oh, good. See, I didn't know
and
that.
And it's being used.
We're still beta testing it. That's why nobody knows.
That's okay.
We want to make sure all the kinks were worked out before we turned it loose. So.
Well, you know, like I said, this is Ginger again. So I brought my staff to eligibility training. We are more than willing to help with the tasks of intake. I feel like my staff, I would dare say, understands it as well as anybody because we've sat through the same training, but, and we're willing to help. I just want to be able to know that referred students can get assistance. And I will just tell you straight up, and this has been echoed by every adult ed director in our region, and some who aren't sitting here, but participate in our region, they can't get their students served from adult education perspective. That is why we're trying to see what we can do to really make clear to service providers that we need our students to be served. It's a target population. As part of our WIOA duties, we have to partner. So we want to see our students be able to be served by both entities. It's a requirement. It's part of our plans. It's what we speak. We just want to be able to see it put into action and know that that we can make those referrals and have students served.
And this is Lena again. Go ahead, Dina, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna ask, this is Dina, what are the typical barriers of reasons why they would not be served?
I don't know because I don't get follow-up. So I don't really know. I send them, I've done applications with them. Sometimes it's a manpower issue, sometimes it's a location issue. I have told staff I will follow up on paperwork if they need documentation. I just need a phone call. So, and I think there was a time, and I don't know if that's still the case, but there was a time when your agency really just didn't have the capacity to be able to get out and inform. And I know that having DCEO there every week didn't make it any easier, but my students still come and ask, you know, and we still have completers that we want to send in for training specifically. And I'll just say that in adult education, if there's subsidized employment, that does not hit our target for employment. So although work experience is great for many students, our goal is training because that's what our students need for credentialing to earn a wage. So I see Lori shaking her head. I know that you're not a formal provider, but I know that you're still
right.
Doing
well, and then that's what we're judged on.
Yeah.
So it's not enough anymore that we assist a student in obtaining their GED or high school equivalency. We are also being funded on whether or not they go on to higher ed, whether or not they get employment, whether or not they get a raise in 6 months. And so it's our ball game has changed as well. And so we're not being nitpicky we're being held to a different standard, and so we need your help to get those students to that level so our funding isn't decreased.
Yeah.
And what do you have to do as a referral process to get that out to the WIOA providers?
You know what?
I filled out the intake form with students before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will
and
do
send
anything.
Send it to the WIOA providers?
Yeah.
Did you send that to Pam's office?
Yeah.
Or Outreach office?
No, I sent that to, I left it in the mailbox at our location. We have a box at our location that's checked regularly. Yeah.
And I work with Bruce, and he's been fabulous since he got here, and he like comes to my GED classroom and talks to the students, and he has been very good. Like, he even came and talked to guidance counselors the other day for me, and it's amazing. In a whole room of guidance counselors from all 9 of our high schools, no one knew about this program.
And that's, and this is Lena again, that's something that Angie and I talked about. I said, I know that we used to have what they used to be called.
Summer Youth Employment.
Yeah, through the high schools.
Mm-hmm.
It was through the high school. You know, I know they used to have student workers, and it was through WIOA or JCPA.
I know. Well, and that could be part of the problem, is they keep changing the name. So.
Yes, but, you know, that's something we've talked about internally, is we need to get our career planners out there, get them to the guidance counselors, mm-hmm. get them to the colleges. Heck, take them to places where they have huge staff turnover and they might want to train them. You know, we've had excellent success with our work experience people. Had we hired them on at Wadi without any soft skill training or that work experience, they wouldn't have lasted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't know, I do have to be at work on time.
Right.
This is how you answer a phone
Absolutely.
Call. No, don't chew your gum.
Right.
I mean, just
well, they don't
simple,
know.
Yeah, and it's simple things that we work through with them, but as an employee, if some of these things are going on, then you know we're not going to keep it. But if you can't show up to work, you can't be here. And I can't tell you the percentage now, but there are probably only about 3 work experience people that we've had, and we have work experience through Community Service Block Grant and WIOA. So this is a mix. We probably only had 3 or 4 that did not obtain full-time employment after work experience.
Wow, that's awesome.
Many of them are with our agency, and they're still with us. Sandra, Chris, Rebecca Venable, and those are just 3 that I can, so I mean those are 4 that I can think of off the top of my head where we are getting in and we're pushing the work experience, not just focusing on work experience, but you know, again, we have new strategies and we're pushing to get this money spent and people served.
Well, and I think that as a board, we've not been very good about communicating with you what we want to see in your quarterly reports.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and I think for one thing, when you have a board as big as we have and we only meet quarterly, I think so many of the people on the board are still at the what's going on. You know, even people who have been on the board for years and years and years don't really understand the ins and outs. And so when we get those quarterly reports, we're okay. And unless you're in the trenches and know what we need, I mean, I think that that's partially our fault as well, is that we haven't said, okay, this is what we want a quarterly report to look like. This is the information we need. And because when we had all 3 service providers, like all 3 quarterly reports were completely different, you know, and we, you know, I think as a board, we need to say, okay, so this is what we need.
Can we get, I mean, a board training? I know we have to do, with a lot of our programs, annual board training, how to read the expenditure reports, you know, all of that information. Could we get something put together that's actually in writing, and this is what we want, and you know, work through with the board on that?
I mean, I think that would be fabulous. I think as a board, we also need a better onboarding procedure that says, you know, here's the bylaws, here's this, here's that.
They do get that. I visit every single solitary one of them and sit with them. But we also have to remember that our board is business led. And if we look around this table, there are no business people here because business people are busy doing their business. So I think that's something that
we're looking for. Amen.
Hey, Chris. So I think that that's something that we, that as a board, we always have to remember. Chris, even though he might want to know, he has to know it in a time capsule because he may have 2 minutes to devote to me.
Yeah. Well, and Dean.
And they're good 2 minutes, Dean and Chris, aren't they?
Amen. Well, what about, I have a question about the board member training. Hey, remember we used to, that each board member had to take the classes to kind of give them an idea of what's going on. So I remember it took me 3-4 years to figure out what it was doing there.
We decided
we started having the training, it really helped out.
Hey, Dean, we decided that rather than having everybody sit through that over and over again, I just go with the book and I actually sit with them. So I meet them one-on-one. I do that and county CEOs both, so that they have a name to a face. We kind of found that that worked better than having them brought in for a training, because we just kind of got deer in the headlight looks.
Since you mentioned county CEOs, this is Dina. One of Ginger's questions had to do with
the... I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
And it's changed considerably in the last 10 years, and it's the last year, what the board's responsibilities and what everybody's responsibilities have changed and what we're trying to do. So, I mean, enjoying listening to where we're going with this and piecing everything together, and we're all trying to go in the same direction, and that we understand what our responsibilities are, especially as a board member. So, I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, it's okay. One of Ginger's questions had to do with the conflict of interest. When we had the call, there was some discussion that the CEOs are members of our board.
Yeah.
That I wanted to clear that up. Yeah. On occasion, the chairman of the county commissioners is a member of our board,
yeah.
But that is not a requirement.
Yeah.
A community action agency has 1/3 elected official, which the commissioners decide who that is,
sure.
And that rotates, and they rotate who's chairman. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make that
sure.
Clear. And then we have 1/3 that's private sector and 1/3 that's an actual member of low income or someone that represents that group.
And I'll tell you, that it was not as much a question for you as one that I just wanted us to all talk about since we're sitting down.
Yes.
I think that's on the board. So I think that, so we have the discussion, I don't remember if it was during the call or after the call, that we have had occasion where the chair of your board was the chair of our committee that was awarding your dollars. That does not look good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's on us, that's not on you. But it's something we needed to discuss so that we're sure that the person in charge of your agency's board is not awarding your agency their
mm-hmm.
dollars. It just doesn't, it's just not appropriate. So that really was not about the two of you. It was about us making sure that we're looking for those ways that we can clean it up.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's a question that, and, you know, I hope this doesn't make anybody mad, but the question was put forth about the conflict of interest. Who is the executive committee actually going to approve the funding application, the funding release to the providers?
I believe that they're going to.
I mean, are they,
did
the,
Royce,
are they the people responsible?
Yeah. Did Royce happen to get on the call? I guess not. I believe what's going to happen is after this meeting, I think Royce Carter is going to call a special called board meeting in November and let the full board do it. I believe that's what's going to happen.
I think that's kind of what we talked about too, so that it wasn't just an executive committee decision.
Because, and again, I hope this doesn't upset anybody, but you know, my concern with that question was, you know, you have a son that works for a provider.
Yep.
You know, are you
yep.
making a decision
nope.
on is the money
going?
I
will not be voting.
So we wanted to make sure of that, but you know,
and I think doesn't it have to go to the whole board?
No,
it does
doesn't.
Not.
Our bylaws allow the executive committee to act for the board.
For the board. I think I would feel better to the whole board.
Well, that was Royce's.
Yeah, I think we figured that everyone would.
Okay.
Yeah.
We probably need to revisit and read the conflict of interest in the local policy, because there's a fine line on it all, and it's really close to our board makeup that we might be potentially crossing that line.
Yeah, and
so.
It's actual conflict or perceived conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And our board is really good about abstaining if
mm-hmm.
it's even perceived. So I don't believe we have an issue with that. For example, when it comes time, Ginger will abstain.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, Dina and I.
And
abstain.
You guys
well.
Always,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. So.
And we have, actually, we have another person on the WIB board that's on the WADI board, and I already know she'll abstain as well.
And Wayne Eichhorn and Larry Stewart both generally abstain when it's anything to do with that. So I mean, of all of our issues, I feel like we're best covered on that one.
Well, we know everybody knows everybody in our area, and they're all connected, so it's hard to not have any relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is almost impossible.
Well, and I know with the Shawnee Development Board that we review a vendor list every year. We sign a conflict of interest. It becomes something that we do annually. It's part of our required standards to be a community action agency, you know? So we take care of that and have the training, you know, and talk about it, so.
And through a community action agency with the CSBG organizational standards, we have 58 standards that we report to the feds, you know, and it's through I actually sat on the committee to develop the monitoring tool, and it's pretty rigorous as far as what we have to report and what we have to do and the hoops we have to jump through and what we have to enter on, you know, the data system. So I think if we could just clear up what the board needs from us, you know, I think Dina's in agreement. We're happy to provide whatever you need.
I really feel like we've got kind of relaxed in that. You know, we give a good oral report, but they're only half a minute to a minute long. And as a board member, I sit here too and I go, is that all we said? You know, and I'm like, oh, there was so much more. It's been a whole quarter. There's a lot more to the story. And I would think that as board members, we want the story. You know, we want to hear the success, or we want to see the numbers.
Right.
You know, not always the dollar number, but the people number.
Right.
Well, that means everybody's looking at the budget. At least, they should be more, but at least once a quarter, and some of those questions might pop up of, hey, we're only at 30% of spending.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, what the board office needs from the board is for you to specifically tell us what you want to see. Because me and Lynn and Cheryl are happy to get together whatever you want, but as long as I've been here, we're just shooting in the dark, because I have no idea what you guys really want.
And we have to understand what we want before we can ask for it.
Right.
I have an update on hiring. I know that was one of the questions. Yesterday, was the first day for Salvador Tomas Fabian. He is our new career planner. He comes with experience. He came out of the Migrant Council. A lot of you know that he worked there with the WIA program. He then went to Centerstone in the Carbondale area and worked with individuals there. And so now he has began with our agency. He's going to be placed in our Union County office to target mostly Union and Johnson County. So somewhere where we've got numbers that we need to take care of.
And as far as WADI goes, we have a career planner in every county that we service. So, you know, we have the office and that career planner there. At the current time, we have two backup people that should something happen, we can send someone out, or if they need additional assistance, let's say for the mine closing, especially if we need to pull in from another county, we can. But Angie has a new lady training, a Heather Davis, and then we still have Sandy on tap, so at least for a year. So.
Well, and I do think it's important moving forward that I would like to see from each agency the ability to be sure that you have capacity to train new folks even if old folks are gone. So, for example, if the two executive directors are well-trained in the programs under them, then it wouldn't be an issue if key staff were to leave. You could pick up, you could help retrain your own staff, and in addition to having DCEO training. So I think it's important if you're the entity head signing off on things that happen in your own program, I think that getting a good grasp on that, so that if you do have a long-term employee leave, you're not left completely clueless as to what you need in someone new or in what things need to be kept up while that someone's gone. And that's just for your own well-being. I mean, I just think it's a good way to, it's just a best practice. And so those are the kinds of things that I think are going to help you weather these storms, and there are always going to be staffing issues. And that's a good suggestion for making sure that you've got capacity to keep going if you have key staff leave.
At Waddy, we do have succession planning. We also have some continuity manuals. So on a daily basis, what people are doing, if Sandy, right now for our board, for instance, she's training someone how to take over some of the responsibilities that she takes for the board, mailing out the new packets, making sure the agendas are out, making sure the monthly information sent out. So she has everything in a notebook on that, and she's training someone else. So if she's gone one day, we pull the notebook and it's like, okay, you know, on the third Thursday of every month, we know is our board meeting. So at least 7 days prior, you must send out the board documents, and this is what's required. So we do have systems in place if something were to happen. And, you know, I don't know that that's ever been communicated to the board, but, you know, I know Shawnee had the perfect storm. And I will say, you know, not just with WIOA, but we've had some issues with Office of Community Assistance, some major issues through our state association that we're addressing now. Actually, Dina and I, we had a meeting last week, Waddy hosted, and it was Region 5 for community action agencies, and we had all, I think, but one. Are we the only one that didn't show up?
Well, I didn't think they were in our area.
It might not be.
I thought we were all perfect, but that's okay.
But, well, I mean, we had a very good showing. We had a candid discussion, and we're working with the association now to try and get some changes made and better relationships built with the CEO staff. So, you know, we've had some challenges on that front, too. So it's no new battle for us to have to answer or provide more information or, you know, show them that we have the capacity to take care of the programs we have. So.
One thing that Sandy's been doing is...
Ma'am, I know in a... Ma'am, I know in an email back to me, you mentioned monitors being on site and hoping to have that report back prior to this meeting. Were you in receipt of that? Was there anything within those monitoring report?
We don't have a monitoring report. I have what was their soft exit, which will not resemble even close what their final report is. They didn't, Brian Ellis is who gave me the soft exit. They didn't find anything grievous at any location. There were lots of little picky things, most of which I believe were still related to old things that just didn't get cleaned up. In any of the new files they looked at, they didn't find anything in new files going on. So I don't believe it's as systematic as it was last time. I believe it's still just a cleanup kind of. I know that the few trade things were stuff that there were boxes that weren't checked correctly at both locations. Little human error kind of things. Now, that being said, I do not know what the final document will look like, because like I said, the soft exit rarely looks like the final document I get. I think they sit around in a room and go, oh, that's not enough. Remember, we saw that.
When will you get that?
A couple of weeks, maybe. It's at DCO's discretion. I think their standard says that it has to be to us by 6 weeks. We just really don't know. And what will happen, just if anybody knew, the process happens is they come and they monitor us here in the local area. They do on-site monitoring. Then they go back and complete their monitoring at their desk by digging up reports and looking at what they took back. And then they'll actually, DCO will actually issue a findings letter to us. We'll have 30 days to respond. It'll be sent out to the providers for them to respond to the programmatic issues. My office will respond for the fiscal issues. And then we'll respond back to DCO, and we'll either get a letter back that says they accept our explanation moving forward, or they'll need further information, then the process starts all over. And all of that will be brought to the board. Assuming we have it before the board meeting, it'll all be brought to the board meeting. If not, it'll be brought to the executive committee and sent out to the whole board. From the fiscal side, I don't expect anything very, very, the fiscal monitor didn't talk like he found anything. Again, we always have a few mathematical errors, but I don't think anything major. One year we underpaid Dean Rogan by $1.04, and we had to write him a check for $1.04.
So. And I'd like to address that issue. I did not receive that check.
Did you not? I've been waiting for you. I'll have to find it, Dean. Wait, I think you said you didn't want my dang $1.04.
The exact precise words. I think it's a great job on that too. Can I hear Chris Houghton?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing real good, sir, and yourself?
Fine.
Sorry I was unable to be there. It was a conflict that came up at the last minute, so maybe I missed some of the responses. I heard Dina respond to and Lena with regards to the career planners and the additional staff. Did I miss some of the responses to a few of the other particular questions as it related to individuals from the respective counties and or the examples of collaboration?
I think Dina was waiting to answer that until we heard you on, since it was specifically your question, Chris.
All right. Okay, yes. And since we were a banker, we decided that you would really want the numbers anyway.
Yeah, you're so true.
Yes, sir.
It speaks to the heart, for sure.
This is Dina. I started out the conversation with, you know, comparing, like, how I believe you want things as a board member. What kind of reports and different things you want us to report to you on a quarterly basis. And because I'm like that too. I want to see, you know, specific numbers. I've heard you say that more than once. So what I took was the funding amounts that we were given to write the RFP with. And for our two counties, Pope, when you divide that out, we need to serve four individuals, two adults and two dislocated workers. In Hardin County, it is a total of five, three adults and two dislocated workers, if I did the math correctly. I'm not a mathematician, so I did that. I also printed out a report, participants by customer status, and this is for the entire area. So if there's a specific town, we can, you know, kind of let you know how many people are from that area. It's all of us, so I don't know, Angie, if you got that too.
We haven't broken it down into county, but we definitely can do that. On IWDS, it doesn't specifically break it out, but we can take, and we do have some floating career planners, like Bruce sometimes takes White County customers, sometimes Hamilton County. Depending on where the need is. But we can definitely get the numbers to you of the participants in each county at the next board meeting, and that's not a problem. We don't want to silo the money into a particular county because we want to serve the needs of the customer. It was stated on there that you wanted the RFP, a breakdown of the county, but in the request for proposal, that was already given to us, a breakdown per county.
Yeah, the state gives us, the state's who sends down the breakdown per county.
So those numbers are in the request for proposal. Whenever we submitted our request for funding, we only put the total numbers in there because the breakdowns were already listed. But we do serve the need. So, you know, just like with the mine closing, we're gonna want to put that money to use and, you know, get those in need the service. So we hate to silo off the money per county because we want to serve all of our customers who are eligible. But But I definitely can't.
Well, I understand wanting to serve all the customers, and I do as well, but we are provided the dollars on a county type of basis. I guess want to make for sure that the outreach and service to those respective counties is still being, you know, is still a priority as well. It may not always be, but I'm not interested in knowing per each respective community within, but you know, if we receive X amount of dollars, let's use $50,000 in an amount for Hamilton County, and that would typically serve then 7 individuals, but we're serving 3. I guess I can understand why we might only be serving 3 if that's all that are out there. But what are the efforts then to make up the difference, or to try to find the additional 4, or to get 7 people out of that respective particular county? Don't get me wrong, I believe we're spending money on eligible particular participants, but I, you know, we've had a consolidation of counties into 2 different particular agencies, and I don't want those counties, you know, to be underserved either. So the question is easy enough. We provide you with the dollar amounts. I'm just looking to see what kind of numbers then are coming from those respective particular counties.
Hey Chris, he would be talking about Saline and Pope and Hardin.
Permanent 5.
Yes. Saline, Pope, Hardin,
Gallatin.
Hamilton, and
Gallatin.
Yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
Chris, I think what this is coming out, I think what we can do, and it would be helpful for the board, is bring in, when we have our board reports, bring in the number served, and if we're under that number, explanations of the events we've held, maybe some of the contacts the career planners have made of those efforts, you know, in a quarter of what we've been doing to try and increase those numbers and pay out.
Like it.
Yeah, because I think that's what we're saying too. Our responsibility needs to be to report a lot more information to this board as your service providers.
Well, and we want you to see what we're doing. I mean,
well, yeah, you have some great success stories. And some struggles.
Right, always.
One of your other specific questions, this is Dina, was about our attachments that we had with the RFP. The 10% de minimis plan is what our entire agency uses to share cost, so that not one program pays more than its fair share of the cost coming in. So that document, we were looking at the travel for board and admin. That is where I travel to and from Springfield, different places that I go. Our board receives travel just like Southern 14 Board does for coming to our meetings. So that document was just an attachment to the RFP for that reason. It was not, we always specific. Did that help?
Yeah, I guess maybe that might be part of the, you know, there seemed like there were some things that were stuck on there that were just kind of stuck on there without any kind of explanation. Mm-hmm. And so for somebody that's standing on the outside, you know, trying to look in and make for sure that they understand what's going on, it appeared to be, well, a little less than forthcoming with the information to help understand what I was looking at. So, I think that was kind of a central theme as we went through my particular questions, is that, you know, the service providers have been doing this for quite some time, and I know that because I was involved with them quite some time ago. And then over a period of time, comfort and the path of least resistance can be an easy one to travel down. And I think this discussion and the conversation when they first came up kind of, you know, brings up the fact that detail and information is needed for these particular folks who are meeting on a quarterly basis, and instead of going the path of least resistance, maybe some of that detail that was omitted could have been included.
Well, and before the RFP is sent out next year, it can certainly be reviewed and things added, subtracted, made clearer. It'd just have to be something that a committee took on.
And I'm glad you said that, Pam, because the budget attachment is a basic rundown of the budget. Of course, you know, in our office, we do keep breakouts of different things. But when you're filling out a grant or RFP, request for proposal, you're not going to add the additional things. You're going to put in there what is specifically requested.
And the RFP is exactly what is, what the RFP that we submit is exactly what is asked of us by the state, which is what we do with contracts and everything. Even though the service providers don't necessarily report it to that us that way, we get a lot more detail than we really need. But that's the way we report it, and that's the way it's asked of us. So that's always been the way we've asked it of the provider.
Well, we could look at RFP through policy and planning.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that would certainly be something we could look at for next year.
So then maybe then a little bit further on, it's, again, both providers refer to a long history of success in operation and oversight to the program. Both of you included outcome measures, although the one that I'm looking at, which was for program year 2019 quarter four, has way more fails than it has exceeds or meets. So
that's because that quarter, Chris, that quarter hasn't been dumped yet.
So again, you know, that type of information contained, you know, has a summary on the particular report might have been helpful instead of referring to, we've been very successful, here's the measures, oh wait, they're all fail. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how I was supposed to interpret that, but just a quick summary sheet on top of that that would explain the following attachment does not include all the numbers that are actively are out there enrolled because we haven't, you know, finished that up. It's just that kind of additional information. I don't think it would have taken very much, just a little bit more to help explain to me why I was seeing something that seemed contrary to the statement that was being made.
Well, and Chris, I don't believe we are going to pass all of those measures this year because we did such a cleanup at, it's a compound of things. We had to clean up the end of the mid five, which first started the ball rolling. Then we cleaned up Shawnee Development. Well, since we were cleaning up Shawnee Development, and it looked like we weren't going to pass anyway, we took the advantage and cleaned up Wadi also. So we exited quite a few people who were failures to clean up our books. So I don't know that we will exceed this year.
That's something that Angie and I were talking about on our way here is, you know, how if they're a fail, they don't move on, you know, they drop the program, you know, what can we do different to try and keep people a little bit more engaged? But, you know, if they drop and they are a fail, you know, what do we do?
And historically, we have just kept trying to give them services, hoping to keep them until they finally pass. But the new legislation will not allow us to do that anymore.
Yeah.
There are set time frames when you have to exit them. Now, we are all on this performance group, and some of the performance people advocate, well, you hold on to bad until you got too good, so you can exit too good and one bad, and they'll come. In reality, if we all had our crystal balls, that would work. But if we get crystal balls, I personally am going to use it for lottery numbers, and I will be on a small island nation somewhere. So it's really just a crapshoot.
But that is exactly how we were trained, was target how you exit people from the program so that you always have a positive performance, or
yes,
as positive as you can.
Which is what we should do.
Yeah.
Well, so, and I'll tell you from my perspective, an adult, and we've had this discussion in adult ed administrators meetings, Our fear was that your strategy was don't deal with adult debt students because they're higher risk, so we just got told no for years. And so, and maybe that wasn't your strategy, but that was the perception. And I'm not talking about me and Lori, I'm talking about like 20 directors from the Southern region. Mm-hmm.
Well,
so.
In WEA, we weren't allowed to pay for GED. It was just a no, that is.
No, but we're not talking about GED costs, we're talking about training costs after they follow GED. Because they can be served prior to completion, we know who those students are. We don't refer, believe it or not, we don't refer students we know aren't gonna complete. That doesn't help us either. But we were, you know, trying to refer those students that we see an end to their game, but we still struggle to get those students served historically, and
well,
that's been a bit.
Okay. Now we actually can start while they're in their GED. It just has to be part of their plan. Their plan is to get their GED, then they're gonna get their CNA, then they're gonna get their LPN, then they're gonna get their RN, which is perfectly allowable as long as that is their plan and that's the way it's written.
Right.
And we remember that at each point to open their service and update it with the next service, and open their service and update it with the next service. That's where we get in trouble, is we forget,
Well, and one thing, as a community action agency, you know, you may think someone's going to fail or not complete, but we a lot of times have other programs that can supplement and assist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because they might not appear to be a success story, you know, we have supplemental options that we can put in there and help them, you know, if for some things that WEOA can't pay for, you know, if they can't make it to school because they don't have their electric on and they can't get their kids up in time, you know, we have lighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a multitude of services. So even if you're not referring for WEOA, you know, I know Wadi has a referral form, and I'd be happy to send it around to the colleges and high schools and everything again for what services are needed. So as far as guidance counselors, hand those things out. We'll send you as many as you want. We'll send you digital copies, you know, and it will allow them to call us. It will allow us to call you. It will allow us to share information because there's a release of information portion on it. So I think it could be, the relationships can be improved, and I think we can meet the needs of more people than just WEOA. Because I'm sure Dean is the same, but that's what we're about. We're not just one program and one service. You know, we don't want to just provide a WEOA service if they need more holistic care and there are other things we can do to get them to be stable.
And that was what used to be different at Mid-5. Mid-5 tended to pay utility bills and different things, if I remember this correctly. They were able to, I don't know, other than say it, that if there was extra funding, they were always willing to take it because they were going to dump it into their students or into their participants in other ways. I want to not use the word students because they're not all students.
Sure.
Yeah. And, but for us, like Lena said, we tend to send them down the hall and say, okay, you need to go and meet with Ms. Becky because she can help you fill out an application for your utilities. Your kids need to go to Head Start. We know who to send you for that. So.
Yeah, you can't make it to school because you can't find someone to keep your kids. You know, let us get you some center assistance through Head Start, and maybe that's what makes them successful.
Well, I like to hear those types of collaborations and referrals within the particular agencies. I also had a question with regards to, you know, work-based learning or the OJT, and some of the particular comments or statements there hit me maybe just a little bit wrong. Where one statement was only committed to employers who commit to full-time permanent employment. SDC actively works with employers through a variety of different chamber meetings. So maybe just give me a couple of examples of those.
Hey, okay.
Who you got in OJT right now working? What employers are you working with?
Hey, Chris, let me clear something first. Don't mix up work experience and OJT. With an OJT, it's expected that when the person finishes their training, they have full-time employment. We can't do an OJT with someone who does not have a position to to put somebody in. Now, a work experience is just for them to learn to work, so we can do that anywhere. I just wanted to make sure we cleared that up first.
This week, we had two staff attend a meeting specifically with the Family Counseling Center. They have offices in all seven of our counties, and they were interested in how to do some incumbent worker training so that they can get some additional skills with their staff. Let's see, I wrote some other things down. Let me check my notes. They also were interested in the OJT component because they have been looking for funding. When the state of Illinois had 2 years without a budget, they were struggling very hard to receive their funding. And so they were looking at this. And so they have had a good educational time with them. So that's one that covers all seven counties.
Hey, Dean, can you speak to work experience? Since you're actually on the call and have actually been the employer on a work experience.
Yes. How so?
What's your take on it? Was it successful or?
In general, yes, it has been. The problem we have is this, in pharmacy, it requires you to have a license, a certificate to be in the pharmacy. So first we have to get you to that stage, get into the pharmacy, and then start some training associated with pharmacy. Now the non-pharmacy training, of course, that can happen without them being there. But it's very difficult because it's so long. The training is so long to get people to understand what's going on and if this is something they want to do. And what we are finding out, and we've had several, that once they complete it, that's not really what they want to do. They want something a lot more simpler than that, maybe just as a cashier, if that makes any sense. So they start not a full pharmacy technician. So what we've been doing is gearing it back down the other way to be a cashier instead of a technician. But as far as success in doing that, yes, in doing the cashier part of it, but technician, we haven't had that success. I don't have any numbers on it, but over the years we've had several of them.
This is Dina. Chris, another thing that's going on is we've got testing today at the Vienna High School. We have some gentlemen there, young men that are still in high school that are doing this,
construction management.
Yes, they are going through that.
It's a pre-apprenticeship through the labor union.
And some of the individuals at the high school didn't even realize that there's a cost associated with that. So we have one individual that is truly classified as homeless on their own and needs the assistance and would be eligible, you know. The person that was working with them yesterday, they ended up going on a field trip instead of being there, and she come back so passionate and upset that she was not going to be able to test him yesterday, but she came back with that mindset that, okay, I have talked to these individuals at the school and now they understand, you know, the part of it, the cost and everything, so.
Thank you. What about Wadi? And I'm curious at how the outreach into, say, Hamilton or Saline County goes with regards to employers.
This is Angie with Wadi. Our Saline and Gallatin career planner, Bruce, has really did his legwork. He's been in touch with DHS, listed several names. He conducts a monthly or participates in a meeting two times a month for Job Club, which is sponsored through DHS. And we've actually enrolled four people through this Job Club, and two are excelling in diesel technology, and one's doing really well in welding. The other one, the fourth person that we enrolled, they did drop out, but it was due to a disability issue. But he's attending those meetings. Looks like IDES, it participates in those meetings. He's in contact with them on a regular basis. We had IDES come in and do a in-house training with us on job skills match. So we're in contact with them often too. Our White and Hamilton career planner has recently been in contact with Kim Merck at DHS in Wabash County, and they're looking to set up the job club meetings there as well. That's underway. They haven't taken that on yet, but she's definitely interested in doing that. We have four county managers who participate monthly with the Chamber of Commerce. They are actually a member, and we're looking to add the other two counties also into membership. And the retail merchants, we reach out to them and get a list of membership in Wabash County. So we're out there doing the legwork, participating. So we are involved with our chambers in all counties. We do meet with the regional high schools too on a regular basis and offer our scholarships through CSBG and WIOA services. And we are linked in with the colleges as well.
One question, this is Rick. One question that I may have, since I volunteered to be the disability representative, does both of your agencies have components that allow people with disabilities to receive services?
Yes.
Yes.
And has that been very successful?
Not having enough information with us. We can get you some information.
Well, I know that the Department of Rehab Services, 1/4 of their money is supposed to go to WIOA to provide services for people with disabilities. And I've worked in that field 44 years, and I know that in the area, when you look at unemployment with people with disabilities, it's about 60%, not just 3% that everybody talks about.
Exactly.
Now, with that said, a lot of people with disabilities don't want full-time employment because it messes up some of their benefits. The laws really need to be looked at, because we're causing people. I have clients that work for me that says, oh, I can only work 20 hours a week because I don't want to mess up my Social Security, because I have to have the Medicare component for my medications. And there's a lot of issues with that really needs to be worked around.
Especially with youth. Mm-hmm. I would say our biggest connection with persons with disabilities is probably with our youth dollars, because someone with an IEP makes them a priority of service. So, and as we're in the high schools, a lot of times those are the students that we're picking up, especially for work experience, because that student typically doesn't think they're college bound or doesn't really know what they want to do. So those are typically, so I think you would find that the most, our largest population of serving persons with disabilities is probably with the in-school youth, or yeah, even college age.
And that's a question Angie and I talked about the other day. You know, we know there used to be the student workers, you know, in the high schools. And my mom actually works at North City High School. And I said, I know you have student workers. Why are we not? Why are we not putting them through WIOA? I don't know if part of it is that the schools don't want to mess with the paperwork and some of the partnerships. You know, I know that's really died down. But that's one thing that we talked about, really hitting the guidance counselors or finding out the contacts in the high schools of how do we set this up.
And we have a Beth Reitster is actually on our board, so we could certainly tap into her, and I'm sure
Wonderful.
She could get us wherever we needed to go if she just knew that we needed it.
Can an individual have WIOA funds and STEP funds at the same time?
From the WIOA standpoint, yes, that's braided funding. I'm not sure about from the, I mean, I'm not sure if STEP has some rules, but from the WIOA side, braided funding is a good thing. So we can
think that's generally across the board. Yeah, I'd be surprised if STEP has got, I mean, you may have to do some reporting in a certain way, but I would imagine you could probably do that. That's a good question.
I'd say as long as it's not duplicative.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, you can, we can't double dip, you know.
From what I understand, you can report it in both programs, but then you would just pay for different aspects for that student. So one might pay for transportation, whereas the other might help with the wages or whatever. I think STEP actually helps with the wage. So that would be a good conversation to have and a good way to make resources go further.
Well, and we can even serve a college student with a scholarship. For example, there was a baseball player who was living on people's couches, which meant the homeless, but he had a full ride scholarship. So we were able, so he needed no training dollars, but we were able to pick him up over the summer. He did work experience over the summer to get him more stable. And then as the fall approaches, we were able to help him with supportive services. So I know that we can break funding.
And that's, when we look ahead, innovative processes, we talked about that. Jordan and I had a pretty deep conversation about it. That is one of the things that we're looking at now is WIOA doesn't, the funding doesn't have to be first with every student.
Sure.
And then the Pell becomes theirs. We're trying to see how to maximize those dollars and make it fit. Like this was a perfect example, the baseball student, you know. He needed supportive services and work experience. So someone else may need just the supportive service too. You know, that's what we're looking at, is not making us number one. You know, that we don't have to be first pot of money used. So moving forward.
I also wanted to add in there that three career planners attended the Veterans Stand Down event in Marion. And there was hundreds of veterans there that day. So I really, you know, felt like we reached a large group that day, just to let them know that those services are available to them too. We do, as, you know, going back to Community Action Agency, we do get out and do the outreach. But like what I'm hearing from this meeting is we need to really start sharing that with the board so they know we're doing it.
We talk about the partnerships and
absolutely.
And our partnerships are there.
Absolutely, that would be the idea.
And I've noticed kind of in our general area that there are some things that I'm not being invited to. You know, being a director newly within the last 6 years, there are some things that Ms. Vanderford automatically was on every mailing list that did not get updated. So I think it is something that's happening regionally. So there's enough of us on this board. If you see something that I should be a part of, if you have contact with the person putting the meeting on, you know, I'll look at Ginger and say, you see something at the college and you see no one from Shine Development's on there,
yeah,
and you think it's appropriate that we're on there,
mm-hmm.
you know, help us figure out how to become a part of it.
I would echo that same statement because I can't tell you how many times somebody said, are you going to go to that? I've never heard of it before.
Yeah.
So I think that part of it is there are so many agencies, mm-hmm. sometimes people fall off, and if they fall off, they're just off.
Right.
Yeah. And I will say, you both, Shawnee Development and the WIP office, and what is not in their region, or I'm sure it'd be the same way, are very good about attending our required meetings each year. I appreciate that. And it is a big part of what we're all doing in terms of planning partnership. It's required under the law, but we did it long before they ever really got, you know, hard and heavy about that. And I really appreciate that. I think it allows us to fully plan in a way that helps look for new ways to do things. I think that the goal of this meeting, and I hope I can share everyone's sentiments, are we want to do better. We want to feel like we're doing better, and we want to demand that our service providers do better. This is not intended by any of us, I don't think, no matter what the discussions, to be punitive or contentious. We want to do better. We want to help you do better. We want to find ways for you to do better. And we and I think the board will take responsibility in doing that. If it means laying out new guidelines or asking for new information or whatever, we really just want to see that spirit of continuous improvement.
Which, Pam, if you want, I mean, with our board agendas, of course, with Head Start, we have certain things on the agenda every month that we have to report on. So Head Start, we have to have enrollment, we have to have socializations, we have to have, you know, daily attendance report, training, you know, expenditure reports. So maybe we can use that as a guide and talk together and figure out, maybe we can structure how we report the same way we report to our own boards, because I'm sure Dina's the same. There's a lot we report on.
Yeah, and in this whole process, starting with day one of when we were on the watch list, I have learned that in our area especially, we're doing most of the things that everybody asks us. We're just not very good at tooting our own horns. So we just, it seems to be a problem across the board. From case notes on IWDS, we did the work. We just didn't report that we did the work. You guys are doing it. The board just didn't know you're doing it. And I find even myself, I get busy doing the job, so I forget to tell Kevin. Man, Kevin, I was up at 5:30 in the morning, and I was in Union County at 9 o'clock.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think as we get busy, and I'm as guilty as anybody about telling you all what I do in a day.
One thing that we say is, you know, we have a Facebook page that's extremely active, you know, so I'd encourage everybody to go to the WADI Facebook page and look at what we're doing, not just WIOA, but also some of the events, the services we're providing, job opportunities. So, I mean, there's a lot of information on there.
Did we get your questions all answered, Chris? Sorry, we seem to have went clear around the world there.
No. I again appreciate the opportunity to have discussion and participate. I again wish that maybe been able to be there, but that's kind of the life in the private sector with things coming up at the last minute. So I did feel like I got my, you know, my questions asked and answered, and you know, be interested. Did Royce have a date for this November meeting?
12th. We're not sure where. I think Royce was maybe at our office and not here. I expected him to call on. Oh, you mean the new November meeting? I think we're going to try for the 12th, which would be our normal time, the second Tuesday. That's also the date of our community resource fair, which is going to be 6 a.m. till 6 p.m.
It's not.
It's not the date?
That is the, hold on.
November 12th is not the date? Hold on, I'm.
Is that Region 5 conference? Let's start.
I think that's what you, I don't do
this.
Yeah.
Well, it's on my other calendar. November 12th is the date, but they've changed the time. Okay. Scott was supposed to contact you.
Okay, to?
So they wanted to change the time to 1 to 6 so we could get those shift workers, because he said that those employers are not going to want to come out at 5 o'clock in the morning and sit there all day.
Okay.
So I can certainly see that. So if we did 1 to 6, we could get those that got off from second shift.
And we could get our first shift, and then before they went to second shift, and then the overnights would have
that 5-hour window.
Right.
But we'd probably still be okay for a board meeting if we could get enough people that we're going to
meet. Yeah, I think that's fine.
But it kind of sounds like there's going to be lots of conflicts, Chris, so we may not be able to get a quorum.
Because that's here, right?
Yeah.
So if you all finish up at 6, we could still do
board meetings. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm hearing lots of conflicts though, so we'll send out a survey to see if we could have enough that would have a quorum.
Well, I guess the executive committee could always meet by conference call again.
Yes, that would be the thing. One of the reasons we wanted to do it in November is I hate to push the giving the awarding till December, because I'm worried that the providers are going to run out of money if we don't do it.
No, I don't
right.
Yeah, I don't think we should wait. The questions have been asked and answered to those in attendances, you know, either satisfaction or dissatisfaction. So, I mean, it's time to move forward and you know, vote for the awards or not. And so we either do that in executive committee or we do it at a full board, one way or another. If it's going to be a struggle to get a quorum for the full board, just call another executive committee conference call. Let's decide.
That's what when Lynn and I get back to the office, we'll send out an email asking about conflicts so we can decide if there's enough. If not, we'll just pull together a conference call.
Alrighty. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Yes, sir. Welcome, boy. Everybody have a good day and safe travels if you're leaving there.
Thank you.
Okay.
You too.
Okay. Because we were done, right, Pam?
Unless somebody else has something else, I'm getting lots of head shakes around this table, so I guess we're good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Moving for that date then.
Yeah, I don't particularly see a problem with the approval going forward at this point. So just whenever that needs to be done as quickly. Like I said, I had a conflict on the 12th, but I don't have a problem with your approval.
Do you, my executive members who are here, do you feel like there's a problem with the executive committee doing it? I don't want to put either of you on the spot.
Well, the question is how many of us have to abstain?
Yeah.
This is true. Yes. Ooh, because you'd have to abstain.
How many of us are on the committee?
Can I see the list a second? Let's see. Kevin would be okay. Andrea's in banking. She'd be okay. You'd have to abstain. Wayne would have to abstain. Rick would be okay. Chris would be okay. Lori would probably abstain. Ginger would abstain. Royce would be okay, Dean would be okay, and Dawn would be okay. But there is quite a few abstaining, so,
four,
right?
4 out of, what's the percentage?
There's 11 here. There's 11 on the executive committee.
And so how many for a quorum?
One over half.
Okay.
So if
need a quorum to meet. You don't have to have a quorum.
That's true. It's true. It just has to be a majority a majority, and you could be there, and I would think you would want to be there and abstain.
Right.
Because then you could be in the discussion.
Yeah. So as long as we get a quorum to meet, we could do that, and then whomever's there will go.
Well, I think Royce's thought was is that would then give the whole board a chance to
know that we
stepped up and your new ideas and, you know, give them more information. His also thought was is because December is such a hard time to get people together, maybe we do a November meeting rather than a December meeting. But it doesn't sound like November is any better.
Well, it's not, but they need their money.
Right, yes. Yeah. So. I don't feel like we can.
Yeah.
We need
our providers
need
their
to
money.
Do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, I mean, we have training providers. I mean, it trickles.
Oh, yeah.
It
does.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But being yours,
they need their money, so we can get our money.
The 19 and you have a check on the way. Yours was trained.
Your big bill is trade night.
No, our new bill is off. Our Shawnee College bill is adult.
Okay.
We will need more funds to pay our adult tuition.
Okay.
It came.
I thought you were worried about that. Another one, like, it was trade.
Yeah.
I signed the check for that one.
I'm sure there's always another
bill waiting.
But the, and we were so excited over.
Those trade bills are.
The Shawnee College bill.
The trade bills come in and you go, I don't know if I have to sign it, just it's happening.
Okay. Pam, I have a question, or updating the board. Do you think there's an option that we will ever be able to put in, to call in for board meetings?
And figure out.
I would like, one of the things that Lynn and I have tasked each other as our personal goal, we would like to play with go-to meetings or Zoom meetings, one of those to see.
And
if not necessarily,
I can come out on a Friday if that works.
Calling from your house, but even if we can get it to where everybody could go to Shawnee College, or everybody could go to Shawnee Development that's down there, everybody could go to Wadi that's up here. If we could get like three or four locations.
Okay.
Or it's video.
This way we clean it out, get it all done. Like I said, get the new ones. And have you gone to the STEP program?
That's what we're.
I can hear and see, and everybody can hear me.
CNA and the LPN and then the RN. Okay, you're still an RN.
Yes, that's what we're hoping to move towards. We will have to amend some bylaws and policies. What it says now is that we can use technology. But like all of our others, our policies are all, you could drive a Mack truck through.
Because I don't think we've done that at all.
Our board's theory has always been, let's don't restrict it, let's make it wide open, and then we'll clean up. Then we have room to interpret. I can argue either side of that fence.
Because we at 25 meets during the day.
Yes.
Not in the evening.
Yes.
And that can be, benefit some groups that way too, some of the members on the board.
Yes. So to that intent, I would like to see us be it. It seems to be a very fine line you're walking because of the sunshine laws. Mm-hmm. But then there's also this big long discussion that whether we really have to even necessarily comply, because it seems to me that there's so much gray area in there. And the other thing is they'd have to find Carmi Illinois.
Yeah.
And somebody would really have to care what we did with our $1.7 million. So
I love this. I appreciate you giving us this because, mm-hmm. you know, you look at it, 25 we know is ran through MandraCon, but Area 23 is another community action agency that does that.
Yes, and it's so and 23 is the same site. Well, yes, Area 23 is within a few hundred miles of being the same geographic size as ours. Just to put it in perspective, we are almost 4,900 square miles, which is twice the size of the state of Delaware. Mm-hmm. That lends its own. I wasn't kidding. I live in Fairfield, which is kind of in the northern corner of it. I have to be at Union County at the county board meeting at 8:30, and so I'm gonna leave at about 4.
You should spend the night.
I can't spend the night.
No.
I have a. I've been put on a strategic planning board for the town that I live in, and so I have to meet there the night before. So I keep telling Henry, you know, we're Henry and I are in that, we're in the 10 years, so we're thinking up through.